You're listening to Steve Bertrand on Books. Thanks very much for that. I appreciate it. I hope if you will subscribe to the podcast. You know, you can do that at, anywhere you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, and here at WGNRadio.com. Novelist Stephanie Swallow returns home with her novel, the first novel. It's called The Should the Waters Take Us. It is a beautifully written book about the Acadian people and, well, I would say their disappearing lives. Stephanie can tell us herself. Stephanie, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve.
Tell me about where you grew up and what it's hard for us, I think, to imagine the bayous and the canals and all of that. Explain, you know, set the geography for us a little bit.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Lake Charles, Louisiana, which is the southwest corner of Louisiana, closer to Texas, about 30 minutes from the Gulf, which is a very different landscape from the part of Louisiana that I'm writing about in this book, which is the southeast corner, south of New Orleans and Baton Rouge. And it is largely wetlands. There are bayous, there are saltwater wetlands and, brackish marsh and it's a very watery landscape, obviously. Mm-hmm. Has become more watery over the last 50 years or so and continuing into the future as, erosion has eaten away at the land as it was. And part of that is due to the levying of the Mississippi River. The reason that we can live in that part of Louisiana is because the river isn't flooding constantly. But because the river isn't flooding constantly, the land isn't replenished by the dumps of sediment from every flooding. And so on top of that, the oil industry has cut canals through the marshlands to access their work areas, and those canals let in salt water from the Gulf. They widen over time. They eat away the land. So Louisiana down there, the land itself under people's feet is disappearing at a rate of something like 25 to 35 square miles a year.
Wow.
Which is sizable.
And that's not going to change.
There's been some efforts, none of them terribly successful.
So I guess there are parallels with the land disappearing and, well, you tell me, the Acadian people, are their way of life disappearing?
Yeah. I also grew up with Cajun grandparents. So they were French speakers at home. My mother's generation did not learn Cajun French. It had been, you know, discouraged in school. It became sort of an English-only education in my grandparents' generation. And so the language, as I knew it and heard it when I was a kid, was disappearing. The culture more broadly, I think, is becoming more Americanized, as any place mm-hmm. is. Everybody has access to the internet. Everybody's got a Walmart, you know.
Well, yeah, I was wondering if there are other peoples like that in the U.S., I mean, it seems like sort of a unique situation.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine there are. I think like any indigenous people,
right.
life on a reservation, for example, and, you know, any sort of quiet corner that has, and well, even in the city of Chicago, you know, you think about the neighborhoods that are largely ethnically based, right? Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Humboldt Park, but Humboldt Park is being gentrified, you know, and that's sort of, I've had students who have sort of lamented the loss of the cultural flavor of Humboldt Park as things change.
Stephanie Swallow is here. The name of her book is Should the Waters Take Us? And, you know, we might be cousins.
I wondered about the Bertrand.
Yeah, I don't know if you're prepared for that.
Yeah.
My Jean Bertrand came from France to Quebec in, what do I have it here, in 1685.
So
the family was living in Quebec and then came down here to Illinois in, I think, 1851, a son. So
they were there quite early. Yeah,
we're the people you're talking about, really.
Yes.
Have you ever been, I know you're sitting in Chicago, have you ever been south of the city about an hour in northern Kankakee County? They call it the French Heritage Corridor or something, but there's a town there, and my name's Bertrand, I'm from Mantino, there's a town there, St. George, Little Crossroads Church Cemetery, and if you go back there, it's all Rabideau, Blanchette.
No kidding.
Yeah, Billadoux. So it's a real
around Kankakee.
Yeah, that came from Quebec and settled around here.
Well, I will certainly look that up. I have a fascination with Marc Beaubien. Do you know anything about Chicago history? He was one of the early settlers of Chicago. Came after Jean-Baptiste Point de Sable, but was sort of a contemporary and ran an inn, you know. It was this Quebecois fiddler who was sort of the life of the party. But
So we have this population from France who move in the 17th century, generally, to Quebec. And then the British move in and try to disperse the crowd, right? And many of them end up in Louisiana. Is that how it happens?
It was sort of a long road to Louisiana and a long road to dispersal, too. They were ultimately kicked out of what is now Nova Scotia because they wouldn't swear fealty to the King of England, but they also didn't really want to be French. And so they had sort of a deal going with the English for a while where they were neutrals, you know, neither on the French side nor on the English side. And then ultimately that became a source of aggravation to the British. And, they brought in ships and hauled off, you know, something like 7,000 people of the 15,000 who were there. Many of them died on the ships on the way. They were, they landed in Point South, Maine, Massachusetts, Maryland. Some of them went to the Caribbean, and ultimately found their way to Louisiana as cousins. You know, they had heard from cousins who had landed there, and there were Spanish land grants, and they could practice their faith. Yeah.
And so the Acadians became the Cajuns.
They did, yes.
Okay. I don't want to mislead people. This isn't a history book. It's a beautiful novel. We're talking about the history of it, but there's just one more chapter from France that I want to bring up, and it's about Martin Terrebonne. Is that his
name? Yeah.
Terrebonne. He's emigrating with his pregnant wife, who's all but invisible on the ship. And as the ship is making its way, you just write a short, beautiful chapter, I think, about her giving birth on the boat and, of course, losing the baby on the boat. Tell me about that paragraph or about that chapter, because it really rang true for me.
Well, those historical intermezzos, I wanted the history of displacement to be very much present in the story as it was happening now. And I was drawing inspiration from the book of Genesis. And so that was my version of Abraham, you know, sacrificing Isaac, right? Mm-hmm. Except that the sacrifice actually came to pass in this one. So that was sort of the intellectual, you know, emphasis for that. But the personal one was I had just had my daughter at the time. She was a very tiny little infant, you know, and I would escape to my office in San Francisco for the minute that I could get away from her, and just feel, you know, like every new mother feels, I think, this sense of both freedom and longing for what you left. And also the terror of losing such a small, pitiable thing was very much with me.
In such conditions, yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to go back. I should tell you too, my grandparents, great-grandparents spoke only French.
Did they really? Do you speak French?
No, I studied it in grade school, but not really. Yeah. But when my grandmother would go to visit her fiancé, they would speak French in front of her, so she have never had any idea what they were saying.
Yeah, so, it's a language of secrets.
We're not that far away. Let's go to the present tense then.
Sure.
This character, Boy Broussard, is a descendant of those who came to Canada and then to Louisiana, and he's living a difficult life. Tell me about him.
Well, Boy is from a family of fishermen. His father died when he was young, and he was enough trouble that his mom sent him off to live with an old, you know, sort of indigenous, sort of Cajun, it's unclear, man in the marsh, where he learned how to fish and trap and live off the land. But the land that they've been living off of is not technically his or theirs. It belongs to his uncle and his aunt. Land use in Louisiana until, I mean, again, until the oil industry came in was pretty casual, you know.
Nobody
cared so much about where the boundaries were, and you more or less knew who hunted where and who claimed what as their territory, but the boundaries were fluid.
Well, I get it, because just reading, you cite some laws in a part of it with this defining what this waterway is or that one. And
sure.
Boyd lost his best friend who succumbed to the pressures of living in a disappearing land, I guess.
Right.
His best friend and cousin, right? And so it's his best friend's mom who owns the land.
Correct.
As far as we know. And Boy is... His job is to live off the land. He's selling pelts. He's got alligator pelts and things like that. And then he had an inkling, or he knew that he had a daughter, but he never met the daughter, acknowledged the daughter. And then she turns up in his life. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, he had denied that he, you know, was the father of this child 12 years ago. And, then she starts asking questions of her mother, as children do, and her mother, who wants to work offshore, decides that this is also a convenient time maybe to foist her daughter off on Boy, so that she can go and spend her 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, on an offshore platform. And this is really, I think, where Boy, who is not accidentally named Boy, he's sort of never grown up, and this is his opportunity to learn to be a man. And he fails at it quite a lot, but he also, you know, he does get her through.
He fails at it sort of miserably, but you're right. It's not, I don't want to say it's good hearted, but it's okay. It's okay hearted.
Right? It's okay hearted.
Yeah. And I should point out to you, right, in a period, this is post Katrina, and during the deep water drilling disaster where the rig exploded out to sea and the oil came ashore. You didn't call it deep water.
No, I didn't want to get sued.
Yeah. How'd you come upon the name? I can't remember it now.
Orvian. Yeah, I don't know. It sounded like an oil business.
And this daughter, Lee, her mother goes out to the rig and she's involved with that. We'll leave her development for you to read. You grew up with a guy like Boy Lassard?
I did. My dad was a man very much like Boy. He was not a fisherman. He wasn't Cajun either. My mom's side of the family is the Cajun side. But he, you know, he lived out on the Calcasieu River, outside of Lake Charles in a trailer, much like the one I described Boy living in. You know, it's up on stilts. He raised it himself. You know, he was very much he had an artistic sensibility too, though, and a philosophical mind. You know, he had books on his bookshelf about, I don't know, physics and nothingness, and you know.
Well, it seems like it's a wandering culture that never moves.
Yeah,
I don't know how to put it any better. Right? I mean, the land is moving under them. They're sort of drifting, doing hunting or fishing or whatever, but they don't have the means, most of them, to leave the area.
Right. That's also true. Yeah, and that's the thing. They don't have the means, and also I think many people who live down there, and this was the question that was at the heart of the book when I started writing it, because Katrina had just happened, and I'd read the New York Times coverage and then all the comments, oh, the horrible comments, you know, which have increasingly become, after, you know, several hurricanes have happened since Katrina, plus the oil spill, you know, why do people stay there? You know, y'all dummies, move.
Right.
But people don't want to leave, you know, it's really a beautiful and troubled but beautiful landscape, and it's one that's full of resources.
Home is home. I think
Boy
says at one point somewhere that no matter where you live, there's some danger or terror hanging over you.
Yeah. I mean, I think of the fires in California or Ireland, in France and Spain now. You
places
know?
That don't burn. He listens to NPR. I know that's no accident.
He does.
Right? Yeah. You put that in there for a reason. Explain
well,
it for me.
My dad was an avid listener to NPR, even though he, you know, he was fairly conservative, and I know most NPR listeners like myself are, you know, lean the other way. Mm-hmm. But he, I wanted to push against the idea that the culture there is monolithic, you know, like individuals do their own thing. Not everybody's listening to the preacher. And, you know, my dad was an avid fan of NPR, but also, what was the Irish program, which I kind of give a wink at, Thistle and Shamrock.
Oh yeah, okay, right, yeah, nice,
yeah.
So they're not uncurious people,
right? Exactly. They're some are, but yeah,
anchored in some ways. We mentioned the land and the aunt. That was Rosa Boy's aunt. His uncle is it Jaco? How do you pronounce it?
Jaco, yeah,
Jaco, J A C O T, and Rosa is ill and dying in the hospital, and Jaco and Boy have this sort of standoff about the land, what to do about it. And it's kind of, Jaco has a history in that he played with the devil, right? He made a deal with the oil distributors decades before, and that's haunting him still.
Right. He was also from a fishing family and had worked as an oysterman in his young days. And then when he was about 17 years old, he got an opportunity to work with the oil developers who were buying up land in the area. And he was a French speaker, and most of the people out in the marsh were French speakers, and so he became a translator. And some of the I did not find an actual translator as a character in my research, but it seemed like a plausible person to have needed on hand, because what I did find were stories of people whose land was taken from them by sort of intentional misunderstanding. They were offered quit claims and given a pile of money because they could not read. They did not realize they were, you know, not just leasing the rights for mineral extraction, they were giving away their land.
And so because Jaco is sort of in a part of that, he has to deal with the fallout once these people realize that their land is disappearing, both literally and on paper, I guess.
Right, including his own.
So
yeah.
We're reading about this culture that's moving from France to Canada to find home in Louisiana. And as that's happening, you introduce into the town a black priest from Kenya.
From Nigeria.
Nigeria, actually. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Nigeria.
Yes.
Who has had similar, Father Fabian, kind of a similar displacement, right? It finds its way in Louisiana.
Yeah.
So you think of the idea that maybe this is the place where people wandering find a home, but it's not so much, right? There's still very, is it more racist or is it more insider outsider?
Well, I think it's some of both. I think in Father Fabian's case, it is insider outsider, sort of a cultural divide. I mean, he's foreign, and he's very visibly foreign, and he's visibly foreign. He's a black man in a mostly white area. So, and you know, surprise, you know, parts of that part of the country are, you know, they hold on to some of the old ideas about race, right? However, he's also a priest, and he's respected for that. But there's a cultural divide and sort of a mystery between them. There are other characters in the story. The deacon is Vietnamese American. His family are also fishermen, but he grew up there. He sounds like them. And he's accepted, you know. It wasn't always that way that his family was accepted. So there is sort of an insider outsiderness about it. And Fabian as a character, I think, as anyone does in a situation where they feel themselves to be an outsider, they, you know, he holds himself close. He's cautious. So I think that's part of it too. But then as more outsiders, you know, and conspicuously people of color start coming in for the oil cleanup, that relationship changes. And then I think it is very much a matter of race. I mean, also strangers coming in, but yeah.
So it's a wonderful book. Should the Waters Take Us? And as they are trying to hold on to their land and their lives post oil spill, where a lot of their income is gone, another storm looms, and we'll leave it for that to see how it is resolved for the characters introduced to us by Stephanie Swallow. It was nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
So lovely chatting with you, Steve. Thank you for having me on.
And well, maybe I'll see you at the Acadian family reunion one time.
And I'm going to go check out the French Corridor. Is that what it's called?
I think it's called the French Heritage Corridor, and the church, the parish, is St. George.
Amazing.
And it's just in Bourbon Air Bradley. Yeah, it's all French. I mean, my relatives are
weekend trip.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right. French
nice
power.
Nice to meet you. Be well.
Bye. You too. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Steve Bertrand on Books. I'm glad you are. I hope you'll subscribe, and we'll talk again next week.